The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And among those performances will be one featuring fiddler Kate Fritz and guitarist Matt Torino at the Krannert Center tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock for their weekly Uncorked series. There's always an opportunity to get some wine and also enjoy good music, and Kate Fritz will be on the show with us. She also may have a few interesting stories to tell about her primary job as executive assistant to Dr. Patch Adams of the Gesundheit Institute. First on the show, I'll be talking with Sharon Huff, who is the music director of the Central Illinois, the Brass Band of Central Illinois, who are performing in Morton on Thursday evening and in Monticello on Saturday afternoon. It's live and local. Stay with us. That was a tune called Under the Double Eagle by Joseph Wagner, performed here by the Philip Jones Ensemble. And it will be played on one of the concerts by the Brass Band of Central Illinois. One of those concerts happening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Idlewood Park in Morton. And then on Saturday at 2 o'clock on the Square in Monticello. The Brass Band of Central Illinois is conducted by Dr. Sharon Huff, who is a faculty member at Millikan University currently. And she is my guest here on Live and Local. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
So the band's been around for, what, about 8 years now?
Right.
And you've been the director for most of that time. Who started off as the director?
Mike Forbes, a guy by the name of Mike Forbes, who was the tuba professor at Illinois State University at the time.
And how did you manage to inherit the mantle?
Well, Mike moved away and wasn't doing the band anymore, so the brass band has a board consisting of about 5 or 6 people, and I just had some connections with some friends that knew they were looking for a conductor, and knowing that I had an interest in brass band conducting as well.
Well,
so we got together that way.
Well, I think we've probably discussed this, not necessarily you and I, but the question has perhaps been addressed on this show maybe once before, but that is when we say a band and then we talk about a brass band, what is the difference?
Quite a striking difference, actually. We are called a brass band because we are comprised of only brass instruments. I should say brass and percussion instruments, because we also have percussionists with us. But we don't have any flutes or clarinets or saxophones, oboes, bassoons, any of the other woodwinds. We're devoid of those, and instead we have almost all conical brass, which translates to a more mellow, a more darker sound for the brass instruments. So instead of trumpets, we have cornets. Instead of actual French horns that you'd typically be acquainted with, we have alto horns. And we have both euphoniums and baritones, and then 2 different types of tubas, not just the usual B-flat or C, but we have a B-flat tuba, or 2 B-flat tubas, and also E-flat tubas. The only conical instrument, or rather the only cylindrical instrument we have in our band, primarily cylindrical, I should say, is the trombone.
Well, I think for most of our listeners, you probably need to describe this technical term, the difference between a conical instrument and a cylindrical instrument.
Well, a conical instrument is more flared like an ice cream cone, so it goes from small to large.
You're talking about the size of the tubing.
Yes, the size of the tubing inside the instrument. And, of course, all the instruments go from a small mouthpiece to a larger bell of some significance, so it's the percentage of conical bore tubing, or bore, we call it bore size, B-O-R-E, bore size in the inside of the instrument, versus cylindrical, which of course everyone knows what a cylinder looks like. It's the same size all the way through, and that gives a slightly brighter, more brilliant sound, such as the difference between the trumpet and the cornet. cornet's a more conical brass, and it's a darker sound, and the trumpet is a more cylindrical percentage and makes it a brighter sound.
So the trumpet will keep a cylinder of the same bore size for more of the instrument, more of the instrument's total length than a cornet will.
Exactly.
And I remember, although I would say that I played trumpet in fifth grade, I really played the cornet because that's
right.
The instrument my mom happened to have.
Of course. And I wouldn't say most, but a lot of band directors start their fifth graders or fifth or sixth graders on cornets rather than trumpets because they're a little bit easier to play and they're a little bit easier for small hands to manage because they're a shorter, more compact instrument than a trumpet.
I guess I didn't realize that happened in schools pretty regularly. Well, talk a little bit about some of these other instruments. I'm looking, for example, you said you use cornets instead of trumpets, but there appear to be a number of different sizes of cornets?
Well, so to speak. We do have an E-flat soprano cornet, which is kind of like the piccolo of the brass band. And as a matter of fact, when we play the Stars and Stripes Forever, Gabe Myers, who's a band director at Grove Schools here in Normal, plays the E-flat soprano cornet, and he has the piccolo solo in the Stars and Stripes Forever at the end. So that's almost worth the price of admission there, just to hear Gabe Myers play the piccolo solo on E-flat cornet.
That sounds like fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talked about baritones versus euphoniums, and it was relatively new information to me, that there's a difference between the instruments. I think a lot of people who used to play in concert, regular bands, well, I guess you would say, what would you call the opposite of a brass band? A military band? What?
No, probably, I don't know, maybe a saxophone ensemble. No, I'm just kidding. Or a clarinet choir. I don't know that there's an opposite, an anti-brass band or something, but...
But you know what I mean, the regular band that has flutes, clarinets,
oh, sure.
Oboes, and all those things.
A wind band.
A
sure.
Wind band.
Or a symphonic band.
So people will have played either baritone or euphonium, but what's really the difference between those two besides they both look like little tubas?
Well, it's a word that's used interchangeably a lot of times here in the United States, but it's not a word used interchangeably in, say, England, which is the brass band that I conduct, and most brass bands here, because there are brass bands across the country in the U.S., are typically designed as British-type brass bands, and meaning the instrumentation with the alto horns and the euphoniums and the baritones. But a baritone and a euphonium, although most people, most band directors, will use those words interchangeably, they really do mean different instruments. A euphonium is a larger and more conically bored instrument than a baritone, which is quite a bit smaller. A true baritone is quite a bit smaller than a euphonium, and it's more cylindrically bored than the euphonium. Therefore, it's a little bit brighter and lighter sound than the euphonium, and it is a distinctly different instrument. But what most students play in a school band is sort of a hybrid between a euphonium and a baritone, something in between.
So all of this adds extra color to the brass band.
Absolutely. The different instruments take the place of the woodwinds in that sense. They have different timbres and different instrumental color that allows the brass band to still reach its distinctly, distinct sound and color instruments that we just discussed, especially like the E-flat cornet and the two different types of tubas, and the alto horn rather than the French horn.
Well, here's an example of the brass band of Central Illinois. This is, in fact, we're talking about a British brass band. Here is a tune called The British Grenadiers, just a bit of this. Are you conducting this performance?
Oh, yes, I am.
Sharon Huff with the Brass Band of Central Illinois. They'll be performing tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Morton, Illinois, in Idlewood Park, and then on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock on the Square in Monticello. And you're listening to Live and Local. Brass Band of Central Illinois, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, Sharon Huff conducting. And Sharon, you're, I mentioned at the start here that you do teach at Millikan University, teaching applied tuba and euphonium and other brass. What is your primary instrument? Is it the tuba?
No, it happens to be the euphonium.
Oh, it is. And why did you choose that as a, primary? I mean, I always had the impression that somebody who plays euphonium in high school, let's say, by the time you get to college, probably gravitates either to trombone or tuba. Not necessarily, apparently.
Well, the euphonium has a distinctly lovely sound. It's a very attractive sounding instrument. In fact, the name itself, euphonium, comes from the root euphony or euphonious sound, which of course means a beautiful, mellow sound. So I love the way the euphonium sounds when it's played, and I don't know, the instrument sort of chose me in a way, I guess. I'm not sure. It just was something I really enjoyed playing. And of course, I do play trombone and tuba, but they're not my primary instruments. But I have a background in music education, and I have been a band director, public school band director, from fifth grade through high school level. I've also done some strings and some choir work as well, so you know, we just get out there and we try to have as many people involved in music as we possibly can and have them learn some variety of skills and discipline and working cooperatively and all those good things that come with a good music education.
So how do you get people for the band?
For the brass band?
Yeah.
We have a website, and that finds a lot of people, and so they contact us, but it's word of mouth, and also there was a core of band members already in place. So the board members and other members of the band, we tend to go out and try to recruit if we're having a particular personnel issue that we need to have another trombone player or something bass trombone player. But musicians really are so interconnected, probably like many other fields, but we all seem to know each other, and we just talk to each other and you know, mostly word of mouth, and also some players come through us by contacting us because they've seen the brass band on the website.
Since you have these specialty instruments, the various cornets, you have flugelhorn, and then these tenor and alto horns, do you have to convert some players to the more specialized instruments?
They lend themselves quite well for the usual players. For example, if you're a euphonium or a baritone player, you don't really have any trouble playing euphonium or baritone, except for the fact that the parts are all written in treble clef, and as are the trombone and tuba parts. So that throws a few people for a loop. But once they can figure out the how to read the clef and how to read the fingerings, then it's not a big deal. But it's also not a big deal to play a tenor horn if you're a horn player because all the fingerings are the same.
Meaning if you're what?
The instrument does the transposition for the player.
Meaning if you're a French horn player,
yes.
Typical, you know, as we would normally call that instrument.
Right, right. Actually, most people call it a horn anymore. It's not really called a French horn.
Right.
But the cornet players, a lot of people have a cornet, and if they don't, the band actually owns a few instruments, and they're mostly the ones that people wouldn't have as readily. For example, we have the band owns the E-flat soprano cornet, and we own we own the tenor horns. We own four tenor horns and two baritones and three cornets. So we have a few horns that people can use if they don't own their own, but you'd be amazed at how quickly some of the diehard brass band members will rush out and buy a brand new cornet, for example. Our principal cornetist did that, and, you know, she went right out and got a really nice cornet so that she would have the right sound for all the solos.
Sure. Well, that's fair enough. And if you want to, if you're going to be a principal, you want to be proud of the instrument you're
that's
playing,
sure.
too, as well as the way you're playing it.
That's for sure.
Well, folks can hear the Brass Band of Central Illinois twice this week if you want, or go to the one that's nearest you. The band is based in Bloomington Normal, but they'll be playing in Morton tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Idlewood Park, and then in Monticello on the Square Saturday at 2 o'clock. There are 30 or so volunteer musicians playing these various types of brass instruments under the direction of Sharon Huff, who's been my guest here on Live and Local. Sharon, thanks for joining us, and best of luck with your summer season.
Thank you so much, Kevin. You have a good summer as well.
Here's the Brass Band of Central Illinois in Rimsky-Korsakov's Procession of the Nobles on Live and Local. Was the Brass Band of Central Illinois playing The Procession of the Nobles by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, and that'll be performed at both of their concerts this week, tomorrow night at 7 in Morton and Saturday at 2 in Monticello. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, where we have wrapped up our end of the fiscal year fund drive for WINL Radio. We had a good success, and we want to say thanks very much for your support throughout this fiscal year, which ends June 30th. That's 3 days from now. You can track our end of the year fundraising progress on the WINL homepage, which is will.illinois.edu. And most important, make a gift to help make next year's programs dazzle. Or call 217-244-9455, 217-244-9455. In addition to the support of our listeners, we have support today from Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy Krannert Uncorked, a weekly free wine tasting almost every Thursday at 5 p.m. in the lobby. And tomorrow, June 28th, Matt Torino and Kate Fritz will treat audiences to an evening of Scottish and Irish fiddle music. And conveniently enough, Kate Fritz is my next guest here on Live and Local. She's brought her fiddle along. She's also brought not tomorrow's guitar-playing partner, but the father of said guitar-playing partner. Matt Torino, of course, will be with her tomorrow. Tom Torino is joining her on the show today. Matt actually had to work, which is really too bad for Matt. But I'm, you know, I've been hearing about Kate for a little while, very favorably, I should say, although I haven't had a chance to hear her before now. She has an interesting day job as executive assistant to Patch Adams, a fellow you may have even seen a movie about at one point or another. He is head of what's called the Gesundheit Institute, and actually, as of fairly recently, lives in Urbana, and she's working here. And but she has a long background in fiddling, particularly Scottish fiddling and various kinds of American old-time music. And I want to say thanks to and welcome to Kate and Tom for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
So I will ask you about Patch Adams a little later, because that's itself a fascinating topic. But of course, we're mostly here to talk about your music. But I'm curious about the business that I didn't mention from your bio. We know that you play fiddle. You know we know you work for Patch Adams, but you also have a degree in Chinese studies, and have explored effects of mountaintop removal and its relation to fiddling, which is not something I would have thought about. Just a little bit of your own background and interests.
Sure. So I'm originally from California. I'm originally from Parkersburg, West Virginia, which is right on the Ohio River. And when I was 10, my family moved out to California. And that's where I started playing Scottish fiddle music under the umbrella of the San Francisco Scottish Fiddlers, which is directed by the wonderful master fiddle player Alistair Fraser.
And what interested you in doing that?
I started playing classical music when I was 7 or 8, and actually my mom is a pretty mellow person, but it's actually the only thing she ever really pushed me to do. She saw that there was a woman offering fiddle lessons through my elementary school, and she said, you know, I really want you to do that as a supplement to your classical music. I think she loved the style, and she really wanted me to get into it. So I started taking lessons, around the time that I was 9, and that's how it all started.
So apparently her interest did become your interest.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because my parents have really come to be part of that community. Neither of them were musicians before they started playing the fiddle about a year ago. So both my folks are beginning fiddle players, which I'm very proud of.
So she encouraged you, you inspired them.
Yeah.
Which is a nice little twist.
Yeah, it's nice.
So you got into the Scottish fiddling, and then what?
So I did that all through the time that I was in elementary and middle school and through high school, and then I moved to New York City when I was 18 to go to NYU. I went to the Gallatin School, which is a very small part of NYU, and I went to their program in individualized study. So I was constructing my own course of study, and I started becoming really interested in environmental issues. That was the time in 2007 and 2008 when climate change was all over the news and was really becoming an international issue. And so I started studying, you know, environmental problems, global environmental problems. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm really serious about wanting to make a change on a big scale, I should probably learn to speak Chinese so that I can really get involved in U.S.-China relations, particularly as it pertains to environmental policy and climate change policy.
Why did you pick Chinese? I mean,
the more you read about the news, especially during that time when it was really, starting to emerge that China was becoming this major economic power, surpassed the U.S. in terms of climate or carbon emissions in 2009. It just seemed like kind of the hot place to be, hot place to check out. And I also love languages. And I thought, well, this is going to be hard, and it's certainly going to make my education worthwhile. So why not try it? What an amazing opportunity to just spend 3 or 4 years pursuing something that I might not have time to pursue at any other time in my life.
And that has, I assume, been the conduit to doing what you're doing now, at least at some level.
Yeah, sort of. I mean,
at least opening your eyes to some of these larger issues beyond normal academics.
Sure. So I've always had an interest in social justice, and that was what led me to starting to work on environmental issues. And I actually got that from this wonderful summer camp that I went to when I was a kid, which is run by another famous hippie, Wavy Gravy, who was the MC of Woodstock. And it was actually at that summer camp that that's where I met Patch. He was a counselor there. So I've actually known him since I was a young teenager. So after I graduated from NYU, Patch had always been on my radar as someone that I really admired. I admired his philosophy and his work doing humanitarian performing all over the world. And I just always respected him. And so for my graduation from NYU, my family banded together to give me the opportunity to go to Russia on one of his clown trips. That's the humanitarian work that the Gesundheit Institute does. I mean, among many other things, but they take groups of performers to places all over the world. And I really wanted to go perform on one of these trips. So I went to Russia in 2010, and I was actually en route to China. I had said goodbye to my family. I didn't know when I was coming back. I was going to take the train from Moscow to Beijing after being with Patch in Russia. And it was on that trip that I heard Patch needed a new assistant. And even though I was sort of going to seek my fortune in China, I thought to myself, wow, you know, I think I could really do that. And it would still give me opportunity to travel and be, you know, doing very deep, meaningful social justice work. And still play my fiddle. So I said, yes, you know, sign me up. I would love to do that. And he said, well, you're going to live in Urbana, Illinois. And I said, oh, wonderful. Where's that? So here I am.
Well, we'll maybe get to how he and you ended up here, other than his saying you're going to be here.
Yeah.
I actually did just read this today, so I do know the answer, although I didn't know it before. But since you are here to do some fiddling, why don't we let you do that for a little bit? Kate Fritz is going to be with Matt Torino tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock at the Krannert Center in the lobby for their Uncorked program. Matt couldn't be here today, so he subbed out to his dad, Tom. And what are we going to do first?
So we're going to play a tune. This is a tune that I wrote just a couple of months ago. It's called The Missing Gloves.
The Missing Gloves. Kate Fritz and Tom Torino here on Live and Local. Thank you. Thank you for letting the guitar ring.
My pleasure.
Sometimes people just cut that off.
Not me.
Oh, it's got such a nice ring to it.
So I promise not to talk very much today, but I will say that one of the great pleasures about living in Urbana is the people that come through and decide to stay for whatever reason. And it's been a great gift for us to have Kate move to town here. And she's joined so many different music groups. And we're actually playing a gig on Friday up north in Illinois. And so she's one of these people that just flowed into town and made a contribution immediately, musically as well as in other ways. And so it's a great thing about this place.
Well, thanks, Tom. And I would also just say, as a new performer in this town, it's just an incredible place to land, especially as a musician who plays traditional music. I mean, immediately I found a community of people really led by Tom in a lot of ways. That's just been so welcoming, and there's a million opportunities to perform in this town, and it's a great, great, great place to be a musician. So I feel so lucky that when Patch said, "You're going to live in Urbana," Urbana turned out to be this place.
Not a bad place.
Yeah.
Kate Fritz is the fiddler and Tom Torino the guitarist. Kate will be with Tom's son Matt Torino tomorrow evening at the Krannert Center at 5 o'clock. And is the place, Tom, you mentioned that you're going to be playing north of here, is that central Illinois? Or is
we're up in Princeton, but it's a private deal.
Oh, a private gig. So this is your chance, at least for the moment, to hear Kate play in our area. I'm sure there may be many other opportunities as it came up. So as we were talking earlier, Kate's working with Patch Adams, the Gesundheit Institute, now located in Urbana. What brought him to Urbana, of all places, given that I understand you're actually building a teaching hospital back in your home state of West Virginia?
Right. So the trajectory of Gesundheit has been long and circuitous. The project is about 42 years old, and Patch has been trying to get funding for the free hospital project in West Virginia for all of those many years, since long before the 1998 movie was made with his name.
And by free hospital, you mean a hospital that is free for
yes.
people to go to and
that's,
get care
That's
from.
The idea. The idea is that we would get a major donation that would create an endowment for the facility and for the staff of the facility so that it would not have to be a profit-generating hospital. There's a huge, huge, long amount of research and thought that's gone into this project, and you can learn a lot more about it at patchadams.org. So the actual facility is out in Hillsborough, West Virginia. It's so beautiful there. I love West Virginia. It is where I'm originally from, and I get to go out there pretty frequently. I'm actually going to head out there next week. And we're right now building the teaching center, which is the first phase of the hospital project. And so Patch had been living in Arlington, Virginia, which is where he's from. And he recently decided to move to Urbana to be with his partner of 19 years, Susan Parenti, who's been involved with the School for Designing a Society for many, many years, which is a project over in Urbana that's related to the Herbert Brunn Society. So that's the... that's the story of how Patch ended up being in Urbana. But he's visited this town for many years, and he has a lot of friends here, a lot of connections.
So as it often comes down to, it just comes down to a woman.
Comes down to romance.
Romance or yeah. a woman, yeah, that's right. Which is not a bad reason to be in a place or stay in a place.
Right. Absolutely.
Coming back to the notion of West Virginia and something I alluded to earlier, that's one of the places where they remove mountaintops.
Sure is.
For God knows what reason.
Well.
How does this relate to, or at least what is the effect of mountaintop removal mining on Appalachian fiddle traditions? That's
yeah.
something that you were studying.
So right after I graduated, I got a quite small grant from NYU to go to West Virginia. I had, at the end of my studies at NYU, I became much more interested in the relationship that environments have on practitioners of traditional music. So I was specifically interested in the case of West Virginia, because so many of the tune names, for example, come from actual geographic features of the land. There are tunes that are named after mountains. There are tunes that are named after rivers. And I was quite curious about how those changes in the geography of a place, how they change maybe the way that people write tunes or the way that people think about the tunes that they play, that they've been playing for a long time. So I didn't get as much time to do that project as I would have liked. I was only in West Virginia for about a month, which is, as Tom, the ethnomusicologist, knows, that's not enough time to do a really in-depth research project. But it's an ongoing question that I have, especially because I'm interested in all different kinds of traditional music from many different places, especially Canadian music and American music and also Scottish music.
Not to mention Australia.
Yeah, we're going to play some tunes that were inspired by a trip to Australia. Not my tunes, but... this is an ongoing question for me, and as I explore music from different places, I'm constantly thinking about the landscape. I fancy myself a traveler, so I'm paying attention to landscape all the time.
I actually meant to ask you the tune you played just a bit ago called The Missing Gloves.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about the names of tunes,
sure.
And sometimes people know why they call them what they do and other times not.
Yeah.
What about that one?
So you may know that over in Urbana, there's a dance weekend. The Urbana Country Dancers have a dance weekend called Jam Jam, which happens in January. And my mother had just sent me this beautiful pair of hand-knitted gloves that she'd picked up for me when she was in Scotland. She gave them to me for Christmas. And when I was at Jam Jam, they disappeared. And it was so sad for me. They were these sentimental gifts from my mother. And so I put the word out to the Urbana Country Dancers. And sure enough, a week later, someone said, oh, I have your nice gloves. They're so beautiful. I'll send them to you. Someone who had come in from out of town. And I just thought to myself, wow, you know, that is the kind of community that this is. You know, you can put the word out and you might just get something back, something special. So... yeah, that's kind of I guess that story is kind of a metaphor for my experience of Urbana in general. So I'd written that tune that week, and I was feeling sad about the gloves, and then they came back. So I thought that story was deserving
good
of a tune.
Good place to be, after all. Yeah. Well, it doesn't support my theory of many, many years that the nicer the gloves, the more likely you are to lose them. I mean, it may still be true, but at least you got yours back.
Well, I got them at Christmas, and they were gone by mid-January, so maybe so.
I never got my deerskin or cashmere-lined deerskin gloves back when I left them on the CTA in Chicago.
Well, maybe you should put out the word to the Urbana Country Dancers.
Maybe I need to start playing the fiddle, and then that'll really do it.
Yeah.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. You got an interesting name for your next tune?
Oh, so these tunes come to me from one of my favorite fiddle players and a mentor of mine, Hanukkah Castle, who lives in Boston. And I believe that she wrote these tunes. She spends time in Australia. So they have specific names. These are two tunes. I call them the Australian tunes. Thank you.
You had to do that. Tom Torino on the guitar and Kate Fritz on the fiddle. And I am discovering why it is that I've heard such good things about your playing.
Thanks.
You make it look and sound so effortless.
thank you.
Which is a marvelous thing.
I would just add that Kate is now my fiddle teacher, and she's also a great teacher, and she has freed me, particularly my bow hand. So I'm trying to get more fluid like that, but she has the secrets to do it.
I think fiddle is one of the instruments, Tom, I have not seen you play.
Yeah.
That popping sound, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is her shoulder rest that keeps popping
off.
Yeah,
don't
be
alarmed.
Yeah. I thought it was a string breaking, which is always the worst sound possible.
I brought the second fiddle anyway, so.
Oh, good for you.
I'm just a beginning fiddler, but now I'm starting to. As you may know, I've become a full-time musician now. And so I have much more time to practice, and I've decided to take the next period and really focus on the fiddle.
Well, we in a previous show, Tom, we counted up the, you said seven, but I counted eight instruments you were going to focus on.
Right.
I am. This maybe is the ninth in that case.
No, that's one of them, I think. I hope.
Yeah. Kate, I wanted to ask you about, we were talking about Patch Adams and, you know, his humanitarian clown trips. What is a clown trip like? And have you got to be a clown, or do you go? I mean, are you a fiddling clown, or what happens on a clown trip?
So,
and what's it got to do with humanitarianism?
Right. So we take groups of performers, usually between 15 to, well, our biggest trip takes 90. Clown performers, artists, musicians, to different places around the world that Patch and a couple of the other doctors that he works with have identified as places where there's pretty extreme human suffering. So one place that he's been going for almost 30 years is Russia, and the Russian orphanage system is known to be one of just the harshest in the world. And he started going there in the 70s and forming relationships with Russian people who were taking an interest in doing this work with orphans. And he's just been going back ever since. And, you know, these are deep, deep, long-term, lasting relationships. And the idea is that we take performers to go and go to institutions. We go to orphanages, we go to hospitals, we do hospice trips to people's homes, kids' homes, and we perform for them. We perform with them. And the idea is that we're using our art to ease human suffering. And these are long, long, long-term projects that have been going on in some cases, for decades. So the relationships are deep.
But if you're talking about an orphanage, kids who were in the orphanage move on, but some of them will have experienced
several times. Right. So the kids are in the orphanages from birth until age 18. So if the clowns come back every year for 18 years, I mean, those are ongoing relationships. This November will be my third trip to Russia, and I have relationships with specific kids who I've visited with now 2 years in a row, and there's going to be a third year. So,
and how long do you stay on a trip like that?
They're 2 week trips for the most part.
So it's not like you breeze in, make them feel good for a few minutes, and leave.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we don't have an illusion that we're going to fix the orphanage system in Russia. That's not even the goal. But the goal is to, it's a kind of citizen diplomacy that we're doing. And we're focusing on our art and our performance as a way to do that. And that's right up my alley. It's one of the reasons that I was drawn to working with Patch and working with Gesundheit is that I love that. I love that kind of philosophy. And I guess that's something that I thought about and acted on privately in my own travels before I started with Gesundheit.
Is it in itself an encouraging thing that these places in Russia and elsewhere let you come back and presumably invite you back repeatedly?
Oh, yeah.
And that you must be making an impact if they see the value of this.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I think it can't be underestimated either how meaningful even a 2 or 3 hour visit can be with a kid who doesn't get much really human loving interaction, total attention of an adult for a sustained period of time. That actually is really really meaningful, and I've seen it on the trips that I've taken. Yeah, it really matters.
Russia, Peru, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Ecuador, there are some of the places you've been.
Right. They're not the places that I've necessarily been, but they're places where we take performers, yeah.
Kate Fritz is a fiddler who's going to be joined by guitarist Matt Torino tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock at the Krannert Center in the lobby. It's a free program during their Uncorked series. You can have a glass of wine and enjoy the music for about an hour or so, a couple hours.
A couple hours.
What time does it start?
5 o'clock.
Five to seven,
yeah.
And then Tom Torino is subbing for Matt on the show here today, having learned these tunes not all that long ago.
Yeah, he's a heck of a substitute.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's a delight to have Tom back and to have Kate here for the first time. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Before we hear another tune, which I guess will probably be the final one for the hour, let me mention some other things you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area the next couple of days. Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribe will be with saxophone player Carlos Vega at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 6 o'clock. The Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan continues its performances of the musical Seven Brides for Seven Brothers tonight at 8 o'clock, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and I think their last show is probably on Sunday. You can check their website to be sure. It's thelittletheater.com, I believe, is their website. Cliff Stoker, Dave Cooper, and friends will be at Clark Bar in Champaign tonight at 6:30. Tom Irwin and Jeff Ryan are at Bob's Butternut Hut in Springfield tonight at 9 o'clock. Heartland Theater Company in Bloomington continues its 10-Minute Play Festival Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. The Jim Markham Swing Band is at I'm not sure what all this stands for, CEFCU Center Stage in Peoria, tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Charleston Community Band is performing at Kiwanis Park Amphitheater in Charleston tomorrow night at 7:30. University of Illinois Trombone Ensemble, that might be the Jazz Trombone Ensemble, or at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7. And the Illinois Shakespeare Festival is underway. Tomorrow night, there's live jazz at 6 o'clock, and then As You Like It is at 8 o'clock at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Othello is Friday night, and check their website for the complete schedule. It'll be going for quite some time now. Those are some of the events going on in our listening area the next couple of days. You're listening to Live and Local on 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. We are always grateful to the listeners who support these programs with your financial contributions. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features a sampling of wines from the Pacific Northwest, followed from 7 to 9 by the music of Jeff Helgeson. Kate and Tom, one more tune? Two tunes? What do we got?
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Kevin.
Thanks for coming in.
Nice to see you.
So this is a waltz called Sour Grass and Granite.
Sour Grass and Granite.
Yes.
Explain briefly, please.
I don't know much about the origin of this tune.
All right. Sour Grass and Granite. Okay. That's
but she did say
ones.
This is her favorite waltz or one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Good way to end the show with a waltz.